The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Noreen O'Sullivan is with me now, the former Garda Commissioner, of course. Noreen, you're welcome to the show and thanks for coming in to us. The other piece of news that we've been talking about and has been talked about, not just today, but over the last few days, are these awful threats made against Simon Harris and his family. Threats, I think, that anybody who's been paying attention to it have certainly shook him to a degree. And I thought his statement kind of was, you know, remarkable for all the wrong reasons, maybe at the weekend when he talked about having to take the counsel of his family. I mean, that really sounded like a man who was impacted by it on a human level. Why I'm interested to talk to you is I know you were at an event about a year ago and you talked about a palpable sense of menace that existed in Ireland towards politicians. And it was coming from a small cohort of people, but you talked about how it was kind of, you know, germinating online, but then manifesting more and more in the real world. So tell me a little bit about how that sense of menace, where it comes from, the root of it, the genesis.
Yeah. So back in May 2023, Ciarán, I was asked to chair on behalf of the Oireachtas by the Ciarán Cóirle and the Cathaoirleach, a task force on safe participation in political life, a cross-party task force. And I suppose such was the concern back then that actually the threats that people and the abuse people were receiving online, and not just to politicians themselves, but also to members of their staff and the family. And actually, we commissioned a piece of research rather than just having an anecdotal baseline to have an evidence base, if you like. So UCD did a piece of research on behalf of the Oireachtas. And what we found at that time, back in 2023, 2024, was that actually 94% of politicians that were surveyed had actually been abused within the previous 6 months. And most surprisingly, and probably worryingly, 72% of staff. And then when we take that out, like, the causes of that were driven by some of it misogyny, racism, sexism, but xenophobia, and the differing of the other, which was very, very interesting and also something that we wanted to see through. But I suppose, you know, speaking, we took evidence both here nationally and internationally. We did comparisons internationally. But looking at, as well, even at that time, you know, people were concerned for their family members. Mm. We took evidence and heard evidence from individual people. And I think, you know, the sense of it was dreadful to hear the testimony of people whose families had been impacted by this. And even if the families weren't directly impacted, the worry and the concern and the anxiety and fear that had built up around it. And the big concern being about the impact, yes, on the individuals themselves and what that means for democracy, more importantly. And, you know, the threats against the Taoiseach currently are terrible, and threats against members of his family, and as you say, are very worrying and very concerning for any normal thinking person.
Yeah.
But actually, when we think about what does that mean for democracy itself, and, you know, those precious freedoms that we take for granted that we have earned really well, but hardly over the last 100 years, and where we are. And like, we're probably amongst 13% of the world that actually enjoy those freedoms. So what does it mean if our politicians, if people can't come forward and the right people for the right reasons come forward and participate in democracy without having those fears and those concerns?
And when that research was carried out and the overwhelming majority of people, you know, victims of some sort of abuse online or otherwise in the previous period of time or the period of time you looked at, how much of that were threats that you might consider real? Or if the Gardaí were looking at them from an operational point of view, you'd say that's something we actually need to investigate, or rather that's just, you know, and this is my language, they wouldn't use it, that's just some crackpot who decided kind of late night to tweet at night. Now, if you feel threatened by it, I mean, it's very real for you. But from a Garda point of view, they'd say that's not one you need to worry about.
Well, I think even from a Garda point of view, and certainly in my experience, both in on Garda Síochána and also in the United Nations, you know, so-called, and I'm using the air bracket inverted commas, crackpots.
Yeah.
Well, if you look at the political violence that has been committed across the world, sometimes you could say they're crackpots, but actually they're individuals who are motivated by their beliefs in term, but it also can manifest from the hatred and the inflammatory rhetoric against people online. So, for example, if you look at the murder of the CEO of United Health most recently in December 2024, Brian Thompson in downtown Manhattan,
yeah,
when you look at that, that was actually an individual who was motivated by a lot of inflammatory language online. But if you look closer to home, on actually May 2024, on the day that we launched the report, there was the attempted assassination of Robert Fico in Slovakia at 3 p.m. that day as we were launching the report. There was the attempted assassination of the Prime Minister of Slovakia. And also, if we look at closer to home and when we were doing the research and looking at trends and patterns, if you look at the murder of Sir David Amos and also Joe Cox. So you have these individuals like in the guards or maybe in security circles, we would call them lone wolves, but they're individuals who actually, a lot of individuals who have mental health issues of varying types, they can actually be motivated to take their online rhetoric into real life consequences.
So is that one of the problems, and one of the other problems, the way you describe it then, of the online space, is that it's harder to differentiate the signal from the noise? That there's maybe so much vitriol directed at, say, a Simon Harris, for example, just because of the nature of his job, that it's very difficult then, when so much of it mirrors each other, to decide or to be able to work out which ones are actually from people who could be perceived as a threat.
Absolutely. And it's very hard. So when a threat is received by an Garda Síochána, first and foremost, I even know back to my time, every threat is taken seriously. And particularly one of the recommendations we made in the report, that actually that the investigations will be carried out by the Central Detective Unit, which are a specialist counter-terrorism unit who have a lot of resources and capability that your ordinary guards on the street wouldn't have. But, you know, the first thing is the threat is taken really, really seriously. It's analysed and assessed. And indeed, in some cases, there will be individuals identified who can be easily and readily identified, who have issues. But that doesn't in any way mitigate the reality for the individual, the victim who's receiving this online vitriol and online threat. But I think where you have real issues, such as we saw in the Joe Cox and David Amos cases, where this online abuse actually transfers over into real world consequence. And in both of those cases, the murders of both of those parliamentarians. Yeah. So every single threat has to be taken seriously and has to be really carefully analysed and assessed. And I know that the guards do that on a regular basis, including an assessment of the individual. And so, for example, in other countries, something I personally would love to see here is you actually have also a kind of, for example, in the UK and Westminster Parliament. So you have people who will analyse the individual who's making these threats and be able to assess them in terms of their mental health and what threat they actually pose.
And is there evidence that the sheer scale of vitriol directed at certain politicians, that actually serves as well to encourage the lone wolf? Because it takes a degree of, and bravery seems like a slightly perverse word to use in this situation, but you know what I mean, that there's a degree of bravery to kind of to go out on your own. It's maybe easier to convince yourself, well, all these other people agree with me. Look at all the things they're saying about him.
Well, even if you look at most recently, the attack on the guard down in Capel Street, you know, again, you have to look at the motivations of that individual that carried out that attack. So, yes, it enables and encourages, I would say, people that may be at home, the keyboard warrior that's sitting at home, and then you have somebody else sitting on the other side of maybe the country or the area, and they hear all of this vitriol been poured on, and they can make or demonise that individual to the point that they go out and carry out an attack. And, you know, it's very much predicated on that hatred and that vitriol and that kind of exploitation of the other, that people are made to be demons.
I would like to think people listening to this might think twice then about posting awful things about people in the public eye, given that it might encourage somebody to act in an awful way. But I that's probably a triumph of hope over expectation. In terms of what we need to do about all of this, again, from a purely kind of personal protection point of view, are we going back to the days of the Troubles when, you know, we would have had much more obvious and visible close personal protection of senior politicians?
Well, I think one of the indications of that, so prior to 2011, as I'm sure your listeners will remember, actually government ministers, as an example, had protection and high-level officials. That then was reduced. However, the assessment was such in more recent times that actually a lot of that protection has had to be. And, you know, again, I think it's the public perception. What does that mean? These are not chauffeurs. These are actually close protection officers that are there to protect and to make sure that our politicians can go about. And I suppose, again, as a democracy here, we have enjoyed, if you like, the common touch, and people have been politicians and our local representatives been able to come into communities. But lately, you know, you'll have seen the Commissioner Naman report as an example. People are actually modifying their behaviours and more concerned about their safety and the safety of their families and their staff. And you see attacks on constituency offices. So I do think it's absolutely necessary and it's proportionate. And, you know, all the measures that need to be taken have to be proportionate with the threat. So, you know, we don't want to lose that model of politics and democracy that we have, that people can go out and engage locally. But then there has to be a realism applied to that as well from a state security perspective. So, yes, I think that we are harking a little bit back to when it was necessary to actually have this. But I think the threat is very different. And I think the threat now is manifested in a very different way as well, because you have that conflation of the online, that pile on online that can actually manifest itself in the real world. And then also, I think, you know, you asked a question, what can we do? I think quite frankly, it starts with the politicians themselves, how they behave, the leadership that's shown, you know, the type of language that's used to each other. And we see it across Europe, even in terms of parliaments themselves, the violence within parliament themselves, between political groupings. So what can be done? When we actually carried out the work on behalf of the Oireachtas, there was an implementation plan and very tangible recommendations made in terms of what can be done to actually drive collaboration across the system.
So what you're saying there, just for people at home, is that there's evidence when you look across Europe that, you know, the short-term political gains people might pursue in terms of, you know, the, how will I describe it, the tribalization of politics, the them and us scenarios that we like to paint to further our own arguments, that actually that has real world consequences.
It has real world consequences. And this is not about wrapping politicians up in cotton wool. We want, you know, the benefits of our democracy is we want diverse representation. We want people from all ilks and none to be able to come together and have different and opposing views and be able to robustly debate them, but debate them in a respectful way and in a meaningful way that has impact for the betterment of society. But actually, sometimes what we see right across the spectrum is point scoring and you know, kind of political small political expediency about, but then what does that mean in terms of people that are looking on? So that sense of leadership. But also I think there's something, and we spoke to this in our report and also in the recommendations, you know, that cross collaboration across the system. So it starts with the leadership from the political class itself and the Oireachtas, which has shown great leadership. But now it's actually driving down those recommendations right across the various government departments and agencies. So, for example, on Garda Síochána, Commissioner Nimán, the digital, you know, there's lots of legislation there, but it's actually how it's implemented and then how people are held accountable. And another piece I would add to that, there's also, I think we as citizens and we as society, it's taken that zero tolerance approach and been able to actually stand up and call it out when we see it and not just kind of pawn it off because it's somebody whose political message or who we don't personally like. It's actually much bigger than that. If we take and frame it in democracy, it's much bigger.
Do you worry that the train is currently hurtling in the other direction? You know, when you think of the culture wars, for example, which seems not just politics, but so many other aspects of just day-to-day life being turned into these tribal issues that you're either wholly in favour of or wholly opposed to?
Yes, I think the polarisation of just topical issues, so music as an example,
yeah.
You know, what we're seeing now is a polarisation that actually you're either for it or against it. Whereas actually, you know, in reality, there's room for everything and different. But I also think, you know, when we look at what is it that we want from our society, what are the, you know, how do we engage the politicians of the future? And if we continue this, we want to attract the right people. We want the right people speaking up. And we don't want people who are impervious. We want people that actually, that they do realise the impact on them, but they still go forward and they still do it. And I'd say it's not just about politics, about public life. Everything from presenters all the way through to anybody that's in a leadership position and can influence public life.
Noreen O'Sullivan, former Garda Commissioner. Noreen, thanks a million for joining us.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.